1, assume it's loaded. Rule 2, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule 3, listen to the 2A radio show with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443.
I'm still bewildered about this whole Peace Prize thing. You're talking about a guy who, again, he's done absolutely, hasn't even been in office for a year. Been in office for what, 7 months, 8 months? Has done nothing internationally for peace, but has troops at war in two different countries, one of which is seeing a surge in troops. And that's, bonk my head against the microphone, but it's got a cushion on it, so it's no effect. That's my skull, man. I can't believe this. It just goes to show that everybody's on the take. Just so you guys know, this weekend, I will be taking down the May archives off of 2aradio.com. Of course, they're still completely available at Republic Broadcasting. So I need to make room for October. So the May archives, if you want to get any of those, you better get them today and tomorrow. They're going to be coming down probably late tomorrow or early Sunday, one or the other. So get your May archives of this show or forever hold your peace or go to Republic Broadcasting and listen to them. If you join RBN in order to listen to the archives, it's a little under 5 cents a day. It's like $1.33 a month. It's ridiculously low. All it is to pay a little bit of maintenance and server space. So it's not like RBN's making a killing on this. Personally, my thoughts are it should be about $5. Put a couple bucks into the RBN kitty, but, you know, that's John Stadtmiller's decision, not mine. And he didn't consult me, but that's okay. John's a good guy. So, when it comes to next week, here are some of the following people that will be sitting in for me. Let's see. Ernie Hancock, John Moore, Ralph Winterrood, and Darren Weeks are some of the folks that will be sitting in on my behalf next week. Now, a couple of them, for the days that they're going to be there, and I'm not going to let you know who's going to be here on which day. That's going to be a surprise. Some of them may, they're working something out so they don't have a conflict. So if you happen to hear a repeat or a best of, it's because somebody had a last minute change where they weren't able to make it. So those are going to be available in the studio just in case. Just so you know. But otherwise, you should have, if all goes well, you should have a live host, a sit-in guest host all next week. All these different fellas have their own shows here on RBN. Ernie Hancock has his own show daily, Monday through Friday. Darren Weeks, John Moore, Ralph Winterrood are all weekend guys. I was hoping not to burn out any of the regular guys. I had also asked Dave Champion if he would do a show, and I was asking Dave to do a show specifically on the AK-47. He is rather intimately familiar with that gun, more so than I. I'm familiar with the AK, but I don't know it inside and out like I do the AR-15 or a Glock pistol or a 19mm, something like that. But Dave Champion is much more intimately familiar with that gun. So unfortunately, Dave is so busy with business, good for him, at his office, that he doesn't have the time to spare to do that. And Dave and I have talked many, many times about his availability to come in and sit in for me on the occasion I'm not able to. And two things. First, he does not like waking up this early. So it would be like a pre-recording, keep it in the can sort of thing until we need it. And then the other thing is it seems as though Dave just, when the discussion comes up, Dave happens to be very busy in his office doing a bunch of things. He's the most scheduled man I know. But hopefully we'll get Dave on these airwaves during this time for 2A Radio someday. And have a good time at it. I look forward to that. So we have the FTC, which has decided to regulate blogging. All right. The Federal Trade Commission came out early in the week. I just haven't gotten to this story. They're going to try to regulate blogging for the first time, which would require writers on the web to clearly disclose any freebies or payments they get from companies for revealing their products. The FTC said Monday its commissioners voted 4-0 to approve the final web guidelines, which have been expected. Violating the rules, which take effect December 1, could bring fines of up to $11,000 per violation. Bloggers or advertisers also could force injunctions and be ordered to reimburse consumers for financial losses stemming from inappropriate product reviews. The commission stopped short of specifying how bloggers must disclose the conflicts of interest. Rich Cleland, assistant director of the FTC, Advertising Practices Division, said the disclosure must be clear and conspicuous no matter what form it will take. Bloggers will have long praised or panned products and services online. But what some consumers might not know is that many companies pay reviewers for their write-ups or give them free products such as toys or computers or trips to Disneyland. In contrast, a traditional journalism outlet, products borrowed for reviews generally have to be returned. Before the FTC gave notice last November it was going to regulate such endorsements, blogs varied in the level of disclosure about these potential conflicts of interest. The FTC proposal made many bloggers anxious. They said the scrutiny would make them nervous about posting even innocent comments. Now, this goes into a bit of a freedom of speech thing, so this will be interesting. And second, if the FTC wants full disclosure out of these people, right up front, why in the living hell do not we require that of people in public office? If Harry Reid or Nancy Pelosi or Obama or, Newt Gingrich isn't there anymore, throw me out some other names, or even Ron Paul, anybody is going to stand up in front of a podium and give a speech on one political topic or another. During that speech, right there, being tit for tat, they should be spewing off all of the campaign donors and all of the different free trips they've got and all of the special interests regarding that particular topic who have come to their side, come to their office, given them money, talked with them, sent them on trips, sent hookers to them, whatever it is. If the FTC is going to do that to nameless, faceless bloggers on the internet, they had damn well better do something like this to somebody who's in public office, especially someone who was elected to public office. If they were elected to public office and they give a speech on anything, they should first be forced by law to give full disclosure on anything, anybody, any organization, any monies, any trips, any gifts, any and all everything related to that specific subject before they can go spewing off from their filth hole on whatever lies they're going to try and shove down our throat. If it's an anti-gunner and they take money from Brady or VPC or mayors that hate their citizens that put them in office and want to steal their guns or any of these other derelict scuzzball organizations, you know, if they want to talk about dental health and they get money from some PAC from the sugar industry, they should be forced to have to disclose that at the time of them making their speech. And when that information, when that speech or even a portion of it is broadcast or aired or put out to the public in any sort of news or press release, all of the disclosures should have to be there as well. How about that? You jackasses want to regulate a blogger? I'm happy to blog. I don't take money from people. I will blog until I'm blue in the face. I will blog you into oblivion, FTC. Oh, will I blog? I don't even really know what the hell a blog is, but because the government wants to regulate it, I want to go in there and stir up this pot of chili. Yes. I want to add some habaneros into this pot of chili. So when you take a little taste of my blogging, you will know. I hate government interference. What is with these guys? Where did they get off? Did before they decided to do this, did anybody at the FTC happen to read the Constitution? Now keep in mind, no law was passed. The FTC is writing new regulations. Congress never passed any law about this. This is the illegal fourth branch of the government, known as the regulatory branch. This is exactly the group that can write their own law into books by simply writing a regulation. And it only takes one person to do it, and that's the commissioner of the FTC. Now, their commission voted 4-0 to do this. So instead of having 535 people voting for a law, you had four. The commissioners at the FTC. So, this would be an interesting little court showdown if anybody's actually got the money to fight these guys. Again, one of the sorry-ass aspects of the way this country has to run. You gotta have the money to take these people to court, otherwise they go completely unrestrained. Stay tuned, guys. There's more to come. Bill Carnes right here on 2A Radio.
Assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, 2A Radio with Bill Carnes. Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener, because it's an inalienable right. Not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Good morning, everyone. In one of the biggest slaps in the face that's ever come out of the Nobel Committee, you may have heard of this already. It might be new news to you. Barack Obama has won the 2009 Nobel Peace Prize from the Nobel Committee for his extraordinary effort to strengthen international diplomacy and cooperation between peoples, shocking all of the observers of this prize. Now, a year ago today, Barack Obama was on the campaign trail, spewing all of the lies and rhetoric and BS to try to get the sheeple to vote him in. He's done literally nothing as president when it comes internationally. Nothing. Internationally, absolutely nothing has been accomplished out of the White House. Nothing. Yet, he wins the Nobel Peace Prize for his intentions, strengthen his extraordinary efforts to strengthen international diplomacy and cooperation between peoples. Now, this is the same group who's given the Peace Prize to some of the following. Let me see. Adolfo Perez Esquivel in 1980. How about, let's see, here's a good one though. Desmond Tutu in 1984. Right, so that was okay. Oscar Arias Sanchez in 87. In 88, check this out. The UN peacekeeping forces. Do they make like, I don't know, several hundred thousand of these things and give them out to the peacekeeping forces or whatever it is? The Dalai Lama in 89. In 90, Mikhail Gorbachev. What did he do in 90? Was it that the wall fell while he was in office? Nelson Mandela in 93? Okay, well, you know. How about this one? In 94, Yasser Arafat. Shimon Peres, and Yitzhak Rabin. But Yasser Arafat was one of them. Now, this is a guy who, his whole life, except for one specific chunk, decided not to be a terrorist. Of course, he ended up dying during his last terror reign. John Hume. Kim Dae-jung in 2000. Kofi Annan, the guy who was head of the United Nations in 2001, Kofi Annan, who was on the take, his son was on the take, his whole commission was on the take, but he got the Peace Prize. Jimmy Carter in 2002, for what, going and glad-handing all of the communist dictators around the world? And then, Al Gore in 2007. How does he get the Peace Prize? Is it peace, brother? Goodwill to man. Hug a tree, man. Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, Al Gore. That's who got it. And, of course, this year, Barack Obama. These people are so out of touch, they don't know what they're doing. This has just illegitimized the Nobel Prize, at least when it comes to peace. This right here has just made every other choice for the balance of history that the Nobel Prize will exist illegitimate. They've been skating with it for a while. This one seals the deal. We're going to get to some news that actually matters, some information, stuff that you really want to hear about after the break. So stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
You can have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, live, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
So, you know that there's a website you can go to. I think it's like opm.jobs.gov or something like that. And that's for the Office of Personnel Management, where you can actually look and see what federal jobs are up there. You can go and, see, get a job with the federal government. I want to know how long it is until the FTC hires people to read blogs. Or they won't advertise dumb jobs like that. There are some really dumb jobs like that in the government. What they do is they hire people for other jobs, and then they recruit from within, and then they hire people to fill the jobs that the people were recruited to do the dumb things. So what do you do? I work for the government. Really? What do you do? I read blogs. Seriously? Yes. I read blogs. I am in the blog enforcement. I carry a badge. I have a three-dimensional on-screen computer gun and handcuffs. I can literally go lock down a blogger's site. That's right. I got power, baby. I got power. I am part of the blogosphere. Can you imagine? What do they do? Send somebody a virus if they get into a shootout? Is that the shootout thing? Is they just start throwing viruses back and forth at each other with these government henchmen and the bloggo cops? Is it blog enforcement? Is that what it is? Are we dealing with blog enforcement now? I just don't get it. All right. On to an even stupider story. Three people were injured in Florida in a gun range mishap. And this story's out of Lakeland, Florida. A Tampa couple and an Irish tourist were shot at a Lakeland gun range after a handgun accidentally fired. Now, this tells you right off the bat, in the very first sentence, that the author of this story, the reporter, whoever wrote this, has no idea anything at all about guns whatsoever. Polk County Sheriff's deputies said it's not entirely clear how many times Michael and Sherry Thorot, 9mm, accidentally went off Saturday, or what caused the handgun to fire. The pistol was a Jennings make, Jennings 9mm. It's just a cheap-ass gun. The man had an adjacent stall, the man in an adjacent stall, 29-year-old Gary Flynn of Ireland, was most seriously injured. He underwent surgery after being hit in the shoulder and throat and was listed in stable condition. Michael Throat was shot in the left hand, and Sherry Throat was hit in the left arm. Both are listed in stable condition. End of story. That's it. So, here's the interesting thing. The handgun accidentally fired. And the police, as they say, are not entirely clear how many times it accidentally went off or what caused the handgun to fire. Okay. I am, from Tampa, 3,100 miles, 3,200 miles away, something like that. And I'm going to tell you what happened. I have never been to this place. I've never met these people. I've never fired a Jennings. But I'll tell you what happened. Somebody violated rules 2 and 3. Rule 2, don't cover anything with the muzzle you're not willing to destroy. Rule 3, keep your finger off the trigger until you're ready to shoot. Now, I know those were violated. Most likely, Rule 1 and Rule 4 were violated as well. At least Rule 1. I'm guessing. Highly likely. Treat all guns as if they're loaded. Somebody probably wasn't doing that. What caused the gun to fire was someone had their finger on the trigger and pressed it. Over and over. Okay? That's what caused it to fire. How many rounds went off? Who knows? But that's what caused it to fire. The accident, it wasn't an accident, it was negligence. Negligence. And it was either Michael Throat, or however you pronounce that goofy name, or his wife Sherry. One of the two of them had the gun in their right hand, their index finger on the trigger, not caring what direction the muzzle's pointing, and the round started getting pressed off. Now, I'm going to imagine it was possibly Sherry, and once she fired the first round, started going, and just went into hysterics, shooting everything and everybody. I only say that because that incident has happened in gun ranges before. Generally, if a guy has a negligent discharge, it's one round, and he realizes, hey, I just made a mistake, and puts the gun down. So anyhow, stupid people doing stupid things with a gun that can cause death or serious bodily injury in an untrained area. Wasn't somebody on the range at this gun store? I don't get why they don't do that. It's a liability thing. Oh, we don't want to be liable if somebody gets shot. Oh, you'd rather have somebody get shot. Is that right? Jackasses. More after the break.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
So the boneheads are not just after the guns now, they're after the ammo as well. So here's a little story called Ammo Controls Violate Our Rights. The anti-gun nuts are at it again both nationally and locally. This story comes out of California. By hook or by crook, they are determined to restrict or to do away with gun ownership as guaranteed in the Second Amendment of the United States Constitution. During U.S. Representative Wally Herger's most recent conference call town hall meeting, a caller told of just such a law being proposed at the federal level. Of more immediate interest to Californians, however, is SB 962, which is scheduled to go to Governor Schwarzenegger on October 11th. Authored by California Assemblyman Kevin DeLeon, of the 45th Assembly District near L.A., SB 962 would ban mail order or internet shipments of ammunition to Californians and would require ammunition be picked up only from licensed handgun ammunition dealers. A photo ID and a thumbprint would be required to purchase ammo. Records would be kept and restrictions enforced with severe penalties for dealers or anyone not complying with all the restrictions. This would cause many dealers to pull back from handling handgun ammunition. This law covers all ammunition that can be used in a pistol or a handgun, including any that can be used in a rifle. Thus, it would include .22s, everyone's favorite plinking target and varmint gun. The law is well-intentioned, but will result in real inconvenience to purchasers and probably mean prices will rise, further hampering access that honest citizens have to ammunition, thus infringing further on the rights of gun owners. It would do little to deter the sale of handgun ammunition to gangs, felons, and other outlaws. If those miscreants have trouble getting ammunition from dealers legally, they'll have no qualms about breaking the law to get ammunition by stealing, black market, or any other illegal sources. It will be the honest citizen who will suffer the loss. We need to tell Governor Schwarzenegger to veto SB 962 when it reaches his desk. Well, but of course, I can only hope, please, that they're able to add something dealing with ammunition into this case against Chicago that's headed to the Supreme Court, because this needs to get handled once and for all. That's like having unrestricted vehicles and then restricting the fuel in which you use to power them. Now, I don't know. I got to tell you, in California is a big state, most populated state. There's quite a few shooters there. But if they limit them to 50 rounds per year, I'm sorry, per month, which is 600 rounds per year. Okay, if they limit you to 600 rounds per year in that state, then you know what that does? There's a lot more ammo for the rest of the country, baby. Yeah, that's right. If you knuckleheads in California are so pathetic as to put the same pathetic knuckleheads like you to represent you in California, to make it to where the criminals are not going to follow the law again. That's what makes them criminals. And you law-abiding few are actually going to lose your ability to defend yourself, own, possess, use guns, because the ammunition's going to be taken out of your hand and they're going to do it by putting a little stank on that baby. AB 962. It's about to jerk away all of your ammo. And you did it to yourselves. So, that means the ammunition shortage in the states, well, it's going to be a little bit less because that ammo gets to get redistributed to the rest of the country. Woohoo! When are you people going to learn? When are you left-wing, antisocial scumbag just absolute intend to be a victim at the hands of a criminal? Dumbasses. When are you going to learn? California will be disarmed. And you know what? If I feel like committing a crime, you know where I'm going to go? I'd go to California. Because everybody'd be my victim. That's right. Literally. They'd all be my bitches, waiting for me to come and rain my own crime wave down, because those dogs couldn't do a damn thing, because they got no guns. So, any of you out there listening in California that don't want to see this happen, it's a little too little, a little too late. You should have done something long ago. We're talking a couple decades ago about getting the right kinds of people in office. Now you've got to deal with this, your last hope. Your last little glimmer of hope is to try to get the governor to veto the bill. And if he doesn't, I have a little news flash for you. The light at the end of the tunnel is incredibly dim. And if it's not vetoed, it will simply be shut off. If Schwarzenegger does not veto this bill in California to restrict ammunition, what's going to happen is every gun law, every ammo, every anti-gun law, every anti-ammunition law, every anti-self-defense law that's ever been dreamt of in California will now pass through, pass right on through. Absolutely no barriers, no limits. It'll pass right through to the point where anybody that dreams up any sort of anti-gun law, they may as well just write it into the state books and forget about the formality of having it pass both houses and get a signature at the governor's desk, because it's just going to sail through anyhow. So it'll be interesting to see how the people of California, and I spell that with the letter K, are going to handle this bad boy when Schwarzenegger does not veto it. You think there's going to be mass exodus out of the state of California? No. They won't be. There won't be any big deal. You're going to have people, you know, maybe a group would go outside and march with picket signs or blog about it, provided that the FTC allows them to blog about it. And nobody's going to leave. No, they're going to let it go. You're going to be repressed by your government. You're going to experience what can only be described as tyranny. And you're going to put up with it because you haven't got the intestinal fortitude to fight this. If you do have the intestinal fortitude, I suggest you get on the phone nonstop to the governor's office. You email, you write letters, you call. You email again, you write another letter, you place another call. You email yet again, make yet another call, and send yet another letter. And you get everybody you know to do it. If you have to go out and type up a generic letter, run 1,000 copies off of it, make it a postcard, and then just have people sign their name, print their name and sign their name, apply a stamp and drop it into the mailbox, then do it. Otherwise, if you gun owners, if you pro-gun people, I want to be able to buy my ammunition people in California, don't do it. Every single one of you, I have no sympathy. Sorry. You should have handled it a long time ago. Moving on. Why skydivers would be better off without parachutes. What's this have to do with the Second Amendment and guns? Listen up. In Philadelphia, researchers at the University of Pennsylvania find possessing a gun is strongly associated with getting shot. Duh. These are scholars that came up with that. Since guns did not protect those who possessed them, is what they conclude, people should rethink their possession of guns. This is like nothing that possessing a parachute is strongly associated with being injured while jumping from a plane, then concluding that skydivers would be better off unencumbered by safety equipment designed to slow their descent. Can this study possibly be as stupid as it sounds? This was asked by a fellow named Stuart Baker at Skating on Stilts. Having shelled out $30 for the privilege of reading the entire article, which appears in the November American Journal of Public Health, I can confirm the answer is, emphatically, yes. The authors, led by epidemiologist Charles C. Brannis, paired 677 randomly chosen gun assault cases with population-based control participants who were contacted by phone shortly after the attacks and matched for age group, in groups of age, gender, and race. They found that people with a gun were 4.5 times more likely to be shot in an assault than those not possessing a gun. Now, Brandis et al. Suggests several possible explanations for this association. So let's see what Professor Wizard has to say here. A gun may falsely empower its possessor to overreact, instigating and losing otherwise tractable conflicts with similarly armed persons. Along the same lines, individuals who are in possession of a gun may increase their risk of gun assault by entering dangerous environments that they would have normally avoided. Alternatively, an individual may bring a gun to an otherwise gun-free conflict only to have that gun rustled away and turned on them. What an idiot! You're a scholar. You know, there's an old saying. It's not 100% across the board. There's exceptions to every rule. But you know how they say the rules, if you can't do, teach? Well, you can take it one step further. If you can't teach, teach college. That seems to be the case with this guy. If a bad guy has a gun, and a good guy has a gun, the bad guy's going to get the drop on the good guy. Okay? That's just the way it works. So if the bad guy has the drop on the good guy, and the good guy still decides, I'm going to try to get my gun out and shoot. If either one of them gets shot, they end up in this study. All right. Here's the thing. I want you to all understand something. Every bad guy who uses a gun to commit a crime deserves to get shot. Just my opinion. If they're going to use a gun against another human being to commit a crime, it's now a felony because they're using a gun. My opinion, they deserve to get shot. And they deserve to get shot by their would-be intended victim. However, that does not mean if you're armed, the bad guy has the drop on you with a gun, you're able to use it because he got the drop on you. That doesn't mean that because there's a bad guy and there's a gun, that you should grab yours. Every situation is different. Oftentimes, if you do have a gun and the bad guy gets a drop on you, you leave it right where it is, nice and concealed. Because going for it would very likely, if not absolutely, get you shot. There's three things that it takes for successful outcome in a gunfight. One is gun handling. That's keeping your gun running and going bang. Keeping it loaded, clearing any malfunctions, gun handling. The other is marksmanship. That means hitting your intended target, preferably right where you intend to hit them. And then third is tactics. And my very, very short version of the definition of tactics is your ability to not get shot in a gunfight. Okay? That's it. Gun handling, marksmanship, tactics. You might have gun handling and marksmanship, but it is tactically unsound. If the bad guy has the drop on you, finger on the trigger, gun pointed at you, to at that point, try to get your gun. You are so far behind the curve, that is not the time to do it. Wait till their attention is distracted, the gun's no longer on you, they're moving around looking for other people, something like that. All right? The only other hope you might have is if you're able to literally, without them knowing that it's coming, without you telegraphing it, grab the wrist, maybe over the action of said gun, move it away from you in a safe area where nobody else is, hold it in place while you're bringing your gun out to shoot them several times in the chest. Okay? Possible exception. Of course, there's exceptions to everything. You can Monday morning quarterback all kinds of stuff. Don't be stupid. Because dumbass professors put together different reports like this and put it into the Journal of Public Health. Oh my goodness. The one explanation that researchers don't mention is that one will occur first to defenders of the rights to self and to, I'm sorry, the right to armed self-defense may be people who anticipate violent confrontations, such as drug dealers, frequently robbed store owners, and women with angry ex-boyfriends are especially likely to possess guns, just as people who jump out of airplanes are especially likely to possess parachutes. The closest that Brandis et al. Came to acknowledging that tendency in their admission towards the end of their article, that they, quote, did not account for the potential of reverse causation between gun possession and gun assault, end quote. That is, the possibility that a high risk of being shot causes gun ownership, as opposed to the other way around. Imagine that. While the researchers took into account a few confusing variables related to this tendency, including having an arrest record, living in a rough neighborhood, or having a high-risk occupation, they cannot possibly have considered all of the factors that might make people more prone to violent attack and therefore more likely to have a gun as a defense against that hazard. You are all a bunch of flunkies. To take just one example, not every criminal has an arrest record. Yet it seems fair to assume that criminals in Philadelphia are A, more likely than non-criminals to be armed, and B, more likely than non-criminals to be shot. That does not mean having a gun increases their chances of being shot. Certainly they believe, as police officers do, that having a gun makes them safer than they otherwise would be. Nothing in the study contradicts that belief. You are all a bunch of higher education hacks. And whatever research money was granted to do that should be returned because you flunked. You failed. You're out of there. More after the break.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443. Uncle Sam taught him to shoot maybe
a little too well. Finger on the trigger, loaded. All right. So, Saturday, tomorrow, I'm going to go over to a buddy's house and build a few target stands. We're going to weld up some target stands in the morning. And then in the early afternoon, I drive into Vegas about an hour away and pick up my daughter, who just turned 10, and bring her home. Going to hang out. And then Sunday, we hop in the car, little hybrid, the little energy efficient, going to take me 5 gallons to drive 300 miles car. And we're going to go to Disneyland. And we'll be back sometime, probably Friday or Saturday. I think Friday, yeah, because she flies out Saturday morning the following weekend. And then Sunday, I get to unpack, do some laundry, and recover. So, next week, my lovely listeners, I want you to be on your best behavior for the guest house. If you, whatever comments you may have, I would love to hear. And I'm also going to be, I'll forward them off to the guest house. So, you can always send stuff to bill@2aradio.com. Now, generally, within 10 or 15 minutes of the show being over, I have the show posted on 2aradio.com. I'm going to post each day's show each day, but it might not be till midnight that day, several hours before the next show begins. So they'll be up there, but keep in mind, next week, A, number one, without fail, no questions asked, nothing you can do to change the fact. This is a father-daughter trip for my daughter's 10th birthday. Whenever one of my daughters turns 10 years old, this is what they get. We go to Disneyland, they get the Memorial Brick. We spend a week there, whatever they want. Whatever they want to eat, we have a lot of fun. We go on a tour. We do the autograph book, pictures everywhere. We have a just awesome time. So that comes number one. The posting of the radio show comes somewhere after that, but it will happen on a daily basis. It just might be so late in the day, it's the next day. I'm not going to distract away from the front. I'll probably do it like if my daughter decides she's tired, wants to take a nap, or at the end of the day, once everybody's getting ready to go to bed, I'll grab it and I'll post it. Now, of course, I always post the show immediately. Then I go back, usually later that day or within a couple of days, And I kind of edit, make sure all the timing with the music and everything is down. And then I repost, and it's a higher quality version when I repost it. You're going to get the standard version. I will clean it all up and repost it probably within a week of being back, just so you understand. So there you go. That's what you need to expect for next week. Please continue to send me emails. I'll read them every now and again. Just know, quite honestly, guys, that family, my daughter is coming A number one next week without any hesitation whatsoever from me. I won't even have my phone turned on. I'm taking it with me simply because it takes like a 3.2 megapixel photo and it does video, and I get a 16 meg chip in it, so it'll hold a lot of stuff. But the actual receiver, the service, will be off. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you. In Congress, the executive and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. And thank you very much, folks. That wraps it up for about 10 days for me, and I am out of here.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Fuel your freedoms. The Two-Way Radio Show. 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.